Good morning and welcome to the Monday edition of Byers & Company. In the studios, Tanya Andrix and Troy Polium from Crossing Healthcare will tell you about a program going on in the Macon County Jail that I think you're going to be very, very impressed with. Lightning. It's all coming up next, plus the Illini tickets to give away. Company starts now.
Byers & Company, WSOY, 1340 AM, 103.3 FM, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Back here on a Monday, it's President's Day, or as they officially know it, as Washington's Day. And then last week was a state holiday, I think, for Lincoln's birthday, right? Mm-hmm. All I know is we don't get any of these holidays off. And I'd really like a list of, like, holidays that are actually, like, holidays. For us, it's Christmas,
yep.
Thanksgiving,
mm-hmm.
maybe Memorial Day, Labor Day.
You're,
is that it?
You could rally the whole troops, though.
You
hold, you've got the hammer.
Are we going to take Cashmere Pulaski Day? I mean, there are some
Brian
that are,
Byers wants.
I don't know. I feel like, are they state holidays, federal holidays? And then I always like, are the banks open, closed? And the most important part, are they writing parking tickets? That's all anybody really cares about in downtown Decatur. And that's a tough one to find out sometimes, right?
Oh, yeah. They play a little coy. They play chicken.
I don't blame them. All right. Hey, it is our great pleasure to welcome Tanya back to the program. She comes in once a month to tell us what's going on, not only with Crossing, but the Community Care Campus. And before we introduce Troy, let me just get an overall couple of minutes here about the campus. Every time we talk, things are changing and people are getting further along and more people are coming in. How long has it been open now? Since October?
October 15th. Okay. So we admitted our first patients in our residential rehab and medical detox on October 15th.
And what seems like a very short period of time for most of our lives, right?
Yeah.
Can be game-changing in someone's life from October to February. Where we kind of blink and that time goes by. That can be gigantic.
It's huge. We now have 33 people living on our campus in our transitional housing program. And so those folks are getting their lives back, and it's been absolutely mind-boggling to watch the transformation. We've got 15 of them out at Richland Community College in the industrial skills program doing great things, and so we are watching lives being changed just from October 15th till now. It's
now,
pretty remarkable.
It is, but it's not a pie in the sky kind of thing,
because
for everyone you help, I mean, there's going to be people that just fall back, and,
correct.
And that is, you know, you have to, I think, know that going in or have some sense of realism about that, that not everyone, even with all of this incredible donation up front to build all these facilities, all the hard work that has gone into staffing and bringing everybody in, not everyone is going to be able to do this first time around, second time around, third time around, right?
You're right. And, you know, lifestyle changes are tough. Addiction's a hard disease to battle. And it's not everyone is successful at battling it the first time. But what I know that our patients know is that they have a place that they can go when they are ready. And they do come back. And so that's the good thing about it. But, yeah, we see people come through, not quite ready this time, but they know where they can come when they're ready.
All right. What have you learned over the last 90 days?
I've learned that there's a whole lot that I don't know. And I've also learned how incredibly resilient the human spirit is. And I've been a nurse for since the 90s. And I've watched people go through such trying things. But the resiliency and the grit that I watch folks battle addiction with is amazing. It's humbling to be a part of.
All right. I tell you, I told Nick last week or the week before when this documentary came out on Netflix called The Pharmacist. You got to watch this because this guy, who's the main figure in the story, lost his son in a drug deal that had gone bad, and his son was murdered. And he didn't, even as a pharmacist, really understand, you know, he didn't know his son had a problem. Mm-hmm. And the awareness and the way he kind of came out of his slumber of just not knowing, and then the way he sort of kind of on the front end of this opioid crisis when no one was talking about this at all, and people were getting away with all kinds of bad stuff on your end of the aisle. Like, there were doctors that were out there. One woman in particular, this was in New Orleans or right outside of New Orleans, who was responsible for, 90% of the opioid addiction, in a community this size. It's hard to believe one person could have that impact. But it's fascinating to watch him kind of have this awakening and learning and then putting that passion to good. It's a fascinating story if you haven't seen it, because he started out with, I didn't know anything about this at all, and I lost my son, which is a pretty tough lesson to kind of to wake up and learn about something that way. But you see these stories?
Yeah. Every person has a story, and the stories would surprise you. They're not what you think. People with addiction problems aren't what you stigmatize or think in your mind that they are.
Okay, so tell me, before we introduce Troy, this Restore program, I knew of it, and I've read about it. I didn't know until we took our tour with the folks from Danville that this was based on a program that you researched or went to see where.
So it's in Chesterfield, Virginia.
Okay.
And how this came about is there's a sheriff named Carl Leonard in Chesterfield, Virginia, that really saw so many opioid-addicted people in his jail. He wanted to do something to help. And so he started this program that they called HARP there, and it's Heroin Addiction Recovery Program, I think is what it is. And Howard read an article about it. At the same time, because you have to understand that while there's rehabilitation in state corrections facilities, there's not a lot of rehabilitation that happens anywhere across this country in jails. And so this was very unique. At the same time that Howard was reading about it, I read about it, the same program in a book. We connected that, and he said, let's go. So Howard took us out to Chesterfield, Virginia, and we toured it, saw the program, spoke with the people that were participating, and decided we were going to come back and do it here in Macon County. So that's how it
okay,
that's how it came
let's
to be.
Start with the premise that maybe not everyone is aware of, is that the Macon County Jail is not unlike every other jail in America.
Correct.
That it is flooded with people with mental health issues, with mm-hmm. drug addictions, and the people that are running these jails are not trained, equipped, and or
Correct.
Ready to deal with most of this. I mean, it's just incarceration.
You're right. We really do just warehouse people there.
Yeah.
And sadly, in our community, jails are revolving doors. And so average length of stay is around 9 months. And so if you don't invest in those people, they're right back out into your community, and they're going to do what they've done before. Okay. And so this is an investment into people.
Okay. Troy Pulliam, who helps oversee
yes.
this program. Troy, lean in a little closer to that microphone, if you don't mind, and tell me your story. Because I watched, I can't even talk about that. I've seen video of you talking about this. But tell me about your life. How did you end up where you are today?
Well, I at a young age, I was introduced to drugs, you know, started with marijuana, went all the way up to the hard stuff. And, you know, it's kind of textbook from there. You know, you get involved in drugs, eventually it becomes a lifestyle. Eventually there's crime involved. Eventually there's hurt, sorrow, misery involved. And I kind of went through that, you know, and was able to come out on the other side and get clean and stay clean. And now help people do the same.
So. All right. So you walk in that room with these guys that are in this program. You've walked in their footsteps. You've made the same mistakes. You've
yes,
done
sir.
The same things. I imagine that gives you an entry level into this discussion that most people don't have.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm able to understand exactly what they're going through, exactly what they deal with day to day, exactly what they're facing as far as you know, just reintegrating back into the community, back into their families' lives, just having firsthand knowledge of what it takes to do that and do it successfully.
Okay. So, Tanya, if you could, Troy and others who are involved in this, what does the program consist of? What happens?
I'm
in jail. How do I get into this program?
Sure.
What takes place?
So, first of all, it is a collective decision between Macon County Jail leadership and Crossing Healthcare staff. So when people go into jail, they are assessed. We know what their background is. We know what their health background is. We look at that. Corrections officers look at sort of their classification. So what is their criminal history? And we identify usually between 10 and 12 people at any given time who it makes sense to make this investment into based on their drug use history and their criminal background. They get into the Restore program, and then they spend 40 hours a week. They get housed together, and then they spend 40 hours a week in rehabilitation programming. And so we have the ladies from Project Read come and work on math and work on reading skills, work on career goals. We have Troy spends a good deal of his time working on curriculums and evidence-based curriculums to really get them to understand their own accountability and what underpins their addiction. And that's what happens. And then once they are working through their process, and so this doesn't get them in or out of their criminal issues any quicker. So they still have to go through the justice system and through their legal process. But upon their release from jail, they now can continue that treatment and that support at the Community Cares campus. And so that's what we've established, so that hopefully we can reduce recidivism. And that's the point. It's taking these people who would otherwise cycle back through a history of crime, and it's getting them to a place where they become productive members of our society.
Well,
that's the goal.
You know, there's a lot of judgmental people out there.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, you know, even if you don't have any compassion for human beings, why you wouldn't see that it's a more cost-effective way of running our law enforcement.
Sure.
That if people get back on their feet and are able to sort of be stand-up citizens, that it's a lot less expensive than it is just to jail people.
You're right.
I mean, you would think if you had zero compassion at all and all you came mm-hmm. about with this was from a business model, this makes more sense. But, Troy, you know, you think about jail, and most people, you know, thankfully are not experiencing that. You know, they think about a very kind of hard place where guys aren't going to talk about their emotions or their problems. You know, has that been a barrier to overcome? How do you get these guys to sort of, you know, admit they need help and willingly want to reach out for that help?
Well, yeah, it was difficult at first. Jail's a place for these guys where they kind of have to keep their guard up.
Yeah.
You know, not be quote unquote soft.
Yeah.
So that was the first barrier and still is for the new guys that come into program. But that's why we house them together. They eat together. They learn together. They sleep together, all in the same housing unit.
So there's a strength in numbers kind of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they're around other like-minded people, you know. So if they do have an issue they need to talk about, they can grab another guy from the group and sit down and talk about it. So it's been good.
Okay, so walk me through a week about some of the things that happened and some of the conversations that are had. What happens in any given week?
Well, we start with education. That's how they start their morning. They'll get with the Project Read ladies, work towards a GED, work towards some job skills, some, you know, just learning mathematics, reading, science, things like that. And then in the afternoon, we'll go to some curriculum. Crossings has designed this to treat the whole person, not just the addiction. So we're not just learning about addiction and recovery. We're learning what it is to really be a man and be successful. You know, and that includes a lot, sexual health, mental health, physical health. We have some physical training that we do every day. And then there's also one-on-one, you know,
yeah.
we do a lot of group stuff. Then we do some one-on-one that kind of sets them up. It kind of looks at individual barriers that they have. And we get them connected with outside resources to kind of address those things. So
okay, now this program's been in place since what, May?
Yes.
Okay, so what do we know so far, just results wise,
sure.
since the month of May of last year?
Sure. So Troy keeps data
uh-huh.
on how these folks are doing, and we know that of the group we've had two now who have cycled back into the jail. All the rest have not. Now, some of them have had to go on to Department of Corrections to finish out longer sentences and have given us a written sort of promise that when they return, they will link back into services, and we stay in contact with those folks. People from the team do, but we're seeing very positive results. We've got a lot of our men from the Restore program that are now in Richland taking classes and working towards jobs and reengaging with families. It's not been perfect, but the recidivism rates for this as compared to no involvement, there's no comparison there. We're still pulling data. It's too soon to toot our horn too loudly.
Well, it's not even been a year, yeah.
Right, I mean, but we know this is having a significant positive impact on recidivism rates.
I think that strikes me. I was having a conversation with Howard yesterday about, you know, instead of this being about drug addicts or criminals,
right,
and law enforcement mm-hmm. and the people who are charged, just sort of, you know, by bringing in all these other community components. Mm-hmm. I mean, it truly is like a community attacking
sure.
this problem rather
sure.
than it just being the cops versus the
right.
robbers, because the robbers are stealing something because they have to feed an addiction. It's not just these drawn lines of this versus this. It's a whole community versus this. But it's how do we prevent this rather than punish for this?
You're absolutely right. And we're all on the same team here.
Yeah.
And I think that the thing that I've also noticed is we have off-duty law enforcement on our campus 24 hours a day, working shifts. And those are Macon County Sheriff's and Decatur Police Department. And so the residents that are participating in the program who are living on campus get to know the officers because they're there working all the time. And they've gotten to know them as humans. And so it's been a beautiful thing because the residents who may have one idea about who law enforcement is and what they are like they're learning that they're humans and that they care about them.
And the other side of that equation is that the law enforcement's doing the same thing. Sometimes dragging, not everybody is you know, I mean, it's a time thing. It's an awareness thing. Mm-hmm. Because when you break down, you know, barriers between both sides, and for years, I think there was a lot of law enforcement that had a very close. In fact, I've talked to people who have mm-hmm. changed the way they think, you know, about what's best for society. And it's really easy, I think, for law enforcement people to kind of close off. Hey, listen, if you would spend a month seeing what they see, you would understand why
Correct.
Many of them are against legalized marijuana or any other thing, because they've seen what this stuff can do to people at the worst of conditions.
Absolutely.
And most people couldn't do that job. But there is a barrier, I think, naturally build up to where you quit seeing people as human mm-hmm. beings, because it's just a psychologically easier.
Right.
And I cannot tell you how much I think that the former sheriff, spent, changing and winning hearts and minds about thinking about this in a different way.
Correct.
And that matters.
It matters.
And should be acknowledged. I mean, this communication thing, this seeing people as people thing works both ways.
It does. And it's just been, one of the unanticipated positive outcomes that has happened from this campus is just by employing those law enforcement for a practical purpose, for safety.
Yeah.
They've become part of the team. They're part of why this is all working. It's really remarkable what we have in our community on that campus is remarkable, and many people are going to come and want to replicate it. I know that because of what I'm already seeing.
Okay. What would surprise most people, Troy, about the guys you see every day?
That they're good guys that made a mistake. You know, these are guys that have a ton of potential. You know, they're learning new things about themselves, new gifts and talents that they have about themselves, and they just need another chance, you know, to get into society and get back into their families' lives and prove that they can be successful at it. They're humans. They're good people. They just made a mistake and need a second chance.
And Tanya, we know oftentimes when people hit jail or they mm-hmm. hit rehab, you know, they've burned a lot of bridges.
Sure, they have.
You know, they've, you know, so there's a lot of repair work. I mean, it's not all just, you know, we're going to feel good because we go to a class. There's a lot of work to do.
It takes a lot of time.
And I would just let everybody, I mean, if you think about this, if you're lucky enough that you don't have addiction in your family or near ones that you love, you're an anomaly statistically, first and foremost. Be very fortunate, right? But to those who've had this, they understand. But I would encourage you, think about, like, we just passed, like, January, the new year, right? I mean, how many people had a resolution to go lose weight or get healthier? And how many of you shot that already? I mean, you know, it's done. Take that times 8 million, you know, when it comes to sort of drug addiction and what it can do to you.
Absolutely.
And have just a little more compassion about what these people are going through, particularly people who maybe didn't start down this path, you know, as recreational drug mm-hmm. users. I mean, what we know now with the science, you know, you got the right DNA and right makeup, you could be addicted to opioids in 3 days. I mean, I don't think there's anybody going home from a hospital with a minor surgery and a prescription that's even thinking about that.
Correct.
They might maybe more today than they did in the past.
Sure.
But there's this is complicated. There's no, like, these stories are all over the board of how people get to this place.
You're absolutely correct, Brian, and thank you for pointing that out. These folks in our community have so much potential, and our community is going to be better.
Well, if folks want to help, you know, be a part of it. Because I said, mm-hmm. this whole community pulling together is how we tackle this program. It's not just law enforcement. It's not just people like Troy or in the jail or the campus. There are roles that people can play, right? I mean, they can be a part of this.
Absolutely. First and foremost, if you're a small business owner, an employer, I would encourage you to reach out to me because we have folks that are ready for jobs. You know, we're partnering with Workforce Investment Solutions here in town, and so there's ways that you can be reimbursed for giving these folks a chance to work. They need jobs. They need, they don't need handouts. They need support, and they need non-judgment. And so first and foremost is helping that way. If you want to make a donation, you can always call Crossing Healthcare at 877-9117. But really more so, I would say a chance, less judgment, more support.
All right. You guys are doing amazing stuff.
Thank you,
Brian. Meeting you, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Great story.